Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle.
What's the word of the year? It's a race between COVID-19 and digitalization.
There you go. Yes, very much.
A lot of SMEs here, you notice, have strategies in place to go digital. And increasingly, the take-up rate has been slow. Firms are saying, because COVID-19 has been causing delays in their digitalization plans.
Yeah, although there's a lot of support here to get on that digitalization curve. All of that in stark contrast to the belief that the outbreak has actually fast-tracked digitalization for many companies. And according to a study done by, the Association of Small and Medium Enterprises, and tech giant Microsoft.
Yeah, so digitalization is still and will always be a necessity for economic recovery and, of course, transformation. And you apply this both, especially here in Singapore.
Yeah, C Research and Public Policy Unit recently launched a report titled Singapore Youth Report, Transformation for the Post-Pandemic World, Turning Crisis into Opportunity. And the report highlighted the role of digitalization in Singapore's journey to recovery.
Yeah, you have a lot of conversations, national conversations, in this report, things about the government's push to, for workers to the forefront of technology, how they want to prepare them for jobs of tomorrow, this whole idea of what a post-pandemic world would look like. But what kind of role will digitalization have for economic recovery and transformation here in Singapore?
Yeah, and exactly. It was all of that government support that I was alluding to earlier.
Yeah.
So how can we take this opportunity presented by the pandemic to equip Singapore youth in particular with skills for the future?
Well, let's find out from Santhi Tharan Satirathai, who is Group Chief Economist at C. Good morning. How are you?
Morning, Alan Manisha. Very well.
Thank you so much for taking the time this morning. We've just been talking about, the need for businesses to transform. It's not new, but the pandemic made it even more relevant. It accelerated the entire shift. And C Research and Public Policy Unit has recently launched a report titled Singapore Youth Report, Transformation for the Post-Pandemic World, Turning Crisis into Opportunity. You focus on our youths in this report. Any particular reason why?
Yeah, definitely. Just to give you a background, so we've been collaborating with the World Economic Forum, who is really at the forefront of thinking about future of jobs, futures of skills, for a few years now. And that's part of the reason why we've been looking at youth. And by youth, we mean 16 to 35. So it is quite a wide range. There are two key reasons for that. Number one is, they are the generations that's going to be living with the future for longer, and they have to cope with it perhaps more. But also, secondly, is also because we think that they are also the future shapers. And we want to also see the transformation and potential what futures may look like, at least a sketch of it, through their eyes. So those are the two key reasons why looking at this generation, which essentially Gen Y and Gen Z, sometimes called, will be useful in a way to sort of get us better understanding about the future.
Santhi Tharan, I'm so upset right now because I fall outside that bracket by a long shot. I am definitely no longer youth. However, on digitalization, it's obviously a significant cornerstone in the new economic model, as you're alluding to, of the future. And with COVID-19 as a sort of anchor point, to what extent has this changed opinions or shifted the bar, so to speak?
Yeah, no, I think we have seen definitely a very profound and rapid transformation in digitalization that's happened since COVID-19. As you have said earlier, it has been a strong trend for a while, but the COVID-19 has really accelerated that and change it from maybe a luxury to a necessity. And we see that very clearly in the numbers. We see like 95% of the youth we surveyed say that they have increased usage of at least one digital tools. And that's actually the highest in ASEAN. So remember that this survey we do for the whole of ASEAN. So 95 is higher than ASEAN average, which is around 87%. I think another striking thing about Singapore is that the share of time spent for work on internet is jumped quite significantly from roughly around half to now two-thirds is for work. And lastly, I think probably most importantly is that there's this question now that, we know digitalization is rapid, it's been accelerated, but how permanent is this? Is this just a temporary thing that you do whilst you have this distancing is in place? And we found that actually for the most popular applications, over 60% of the youth saying that they believe this will be a permanent change. So they think this will lead to a new normal. Even after the pandemic is gone, they're not going to necessarily revert back to the usage that they did before. So I think these three things really point to us, you know, that is, this digitalization is really here to stay, and COVID-19 is really quite a game changer.
So very quickly, I just want to clarify that then. Is that people are coming back to you and saying, yeah, we expect and actually we want to have more flexible working in the future, for example. In fact, we think this works better. Is that the kind of feedback you're getting?
That as well. So digitalization is very broad, right? So one of the things we find, it affects, in some ways, it is part and parcel, and it's a key enabler for a deeper transformation that we see. We see transformation in four key areas we highlight in the report: in the way we consume, the way we work, the way we do business, and the way we learn. And what you're alluding to just now is right on point when it comes to the way we work. So the way we work, one striking thing about Singapore, for example, is that it's really stood out to be the one that see biggest increase in use of virtual meetings. I think 70% of youth saying it's increased. You would think that this is normal in every country, but in fact, in Singapore, it's much higher than any other countries we look at. And we also find similar comments as what you said, where I think around 65% of youth saying that they think now that they find, you know, that traveling and going physically to meet someone may not always be necessary. So they find that maybe some of these virtual meetings could substitute some of the trips, some of the things that physical meeting that they have to do. And they think that, you know, this will also be the norms, can be the norms going forward.
But Singapore is such a small country. It's so connected, you know, infrastructurally. I mean, how far away is it to meet another person if we put the pandemic aside? Why is it we still stand out ahead of the rest of ASEAN? You would think that other bigger countries, other countries where locations are harder to get to, they would have this network in place. Is it really a case of I don't know, connectivity?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You're right on point there. So I was thinking the same thing as you, but I think the key thing is really the connectivity. So one of the questions we asked was, you know, how hard it is to cope with remote working or remote studying, and what are the key barriers you face? And in fact, in all countries, apart from Singapore, we found that number one issue is internet quality. So quality of connection has been really the key issues, especially those living outside the capital cities.
Right.
That's not the case in Singapore. So the internet quality is not even in top five. So I think the connectivity really helps and make that easier for Singaporeans for people here to use this kind of virtual meetings more intensively.
So one of the things that Elliot and I were talking about off air was how smaller businesses here in Singapore respond to, you know, the structural shift in the way the pandemic has, you know, materially accelerated consumers and businesses moves online. And as you, you know, pointed out, this comes in many different forms. It might be in terms of working. It might be in terms of how you structure your business, how you carry out your business. There must have been revelations in this report that might affect what you would advise businesses to do. Can you share some of those?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I think the key point of the report is that digitalization is an enabler, but it's not the only transformation. It should be used to help facilitate some of the deeper transformations going on. And there are three things that I think came to mind, and I would probably summarize it by three R's. So first R is the re-optimization of the business. So you're looking to achieve growth in your revenue, but in a more efficient way. So you may not want to, you know, open like hundreds of branches. You may not want to hire an army of salespeople just to try new products. You may want to grow more efficiently, raising productivity, so to speak. And we found that in the past, we have done another study before that, typically, you have about 57% increase in productivity defined as sort of sales per worker when you use like digitalization tools like e-commerce. A second thing is risk diversification. And I think this is really important for Singapore, but even more so in other countries, whereby you want to have your sales diversified across sales across many regions as possible. So if you are selling to just one region, which is quite typical for many SMEs in ASEAN, then you might have a problem that if, you know, there's a slowdown in the local economy, your business can be heavily affected. But if you now reach people by through e-commerce or through online mode, then you're going to have more scattered around. And last but not least, I think reimagining your business, because we have to also admit that we don't know whether after the pandemic is gone, whether the world will be the same, whether the business landscape will be the same. I think some of the parts may change forever. And so you have to sort of use this time to experiment and really find new businesses. And we found that during this period, about 64% of the businesses that we surveyed, or young entrepreneurs, they have actually found business model. They use this opportunity to sort of learn online, try new things, and experiment. And I think the good thing about digital business is that you can do that quite at a low cost and allow you to be very nimble. So I think that's really important part as well, not just surviving, but about imagining and trying to connect to the new normal.
Santhithan, could you help me clarify this? I understand in a report, you found that 75% of full-time students found remote learning difficult. Is this applicable to Singapore?
I think the remote learning difficulties is much higher in other cases, in other countries,
okay,
than it in Singapore. I think there are definitely some difficulties as well in Singapore, but 70% is the number for the region.
Right,
Singapore
right.
number is much lower. And it goes back to the point we talked about earlier, which is really around connectivity.
Okay, fair point. But it's safe to say that digital literacy wouldn't be an issue here. But then again, if you don't have good connectivity, you may still fall short on digital literacy. Is this something we should be worried about where skills are concerned moving forward, especially in our youths who are going to take over the economy?
Absolutely. I mean, I think digital skill is one of the things that came out as barriers. So when we look at it, we not only look at the transformation and the opportunities, but also find your gaps where we should bridge. And one of which is exactly what you said, which is around digital skills. And we found while it's not super common, not everyone say they have, lack of digital literacy or familiarity, it is a very binding one. What I mean by that is, people complain about household distraction, whether it's my dog, my children making noises. That's something you can live with. Reduce your productivity a bit, but you can live with it.
Right.
But for those who say that I'm not familiar with using this digital tool and that digital tool, it's very difficult for them to get over that barriers. So digital skills, basic digital literacy, become a really essential thing that everyone must have. And I think that's one of the big key takeaway of something that we really need to really help gear up. And another sort of side note, but I think interesting as well, is that I think the report also found that digital familiarity doesn't equate digital skills. So just because you are familiar with using the internet for fun, for social connecting with people, it doesn't mean that you can do it on business on it. It doesn't mean you can learn on it easily. It requires some practice, some learning.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Very much. Just finally, Santhithan, now I'm going to do a bit of a loaded question and a bit of a pivot, because I know that you have heritage in Thailand. You chose not to go into politics, but you've certainly seen members of your family in the political system. I'm not going to get your political view in any way, shape or form on the protests that are going on over there. But I do want to relate the fact that those protests, particularly amongst the youth population, might reflect an overall sense of overwhelm at how fast economies are changing and how youth wants incumbent legacy systems to change. Your report feels like a bit of a warning as well, and guidance for governments that you got to get with the program because the world is changing fast. Could you comment on that?
Yeah, so as you said, I'm not going to comment on the politics per se, but I think what the reports do highlight is, going back to that gaps in general, that the role that, and I would say not just governments, but governments, private sector and social sector all together can collaborate and try to help how I like to call young fighters really adapt, right? And one is digital skills, which actually we talked about the basic digital literacy, but it goes beyond that. So we found that there's a striking differences between youth who actually have the growth mindset and resilience as a kind of mindset stroke skills. And that's going to come in really handy. Those people adapt very well. Those are entrepreneurs who manage pivot, and those who do not have that will struggle. Second is around digital access, internet connectivity, which we talk about. And there's a third part, actually, which we haven't talked about yet, which is around funding. So you may have access to internet. You may have great ideas and willing to pivot and try new things. But if you have no capital and no cash flow, you're going to struggle and you can't really pivot your business. And so access to capital, access to funding is really, really important. And I think there's two parts to that. One is we found that in Singapore, the government support has been very important. This is true also, but somewhat less extent in other parts of the region. So I think, you know, thinking of financial inclusion, how they have access to finance, thinking about a social safety net to make sure that when there are big shocks, they are at least can survive, you know, so that they can think about reimagining themselves and thinking about how to adapt for the future. Because if they can't survive because of the cash problem, then nothing else matters. So I think these are the three key things that we need to address as a society, not just as one party.
I was more excited that you might have met some Man City football players when it was under Thai ownership. But hey, that's where my mind is at. Sathirathai, who is Group Chief Economist at SEA, thank you so much for taking the time this morning. Take care and stay safe, yeah?
Thank you.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.